Welcome back. Once again, I'm Bruce Ballast, and we are learning about self-care in this course. And so I invite you today to begin looking at self-care skills. As you hopefully did some reflection on your own life, where are you? You've looked at some questionnaires, hopefully some assessment questionnaires, to see a little bit better how you are doing in this area called self-care. Now we're going to look at some skills now as we begin this process of identifying where we need to take care of ourselves more intentionally, more carefully. Types of self-care. Here they are. Physical. In other words, how's your sleep? Are you doing stretching, some kind of exercise, walking, a physical release? What about healthy food? Yoga is on that list, but some kind of meditation experience and rest. When do you rest from your work? When do you take a Sabbath? When do you separate yourself from the ministry strains and stresses in your life? That's what we're going to be looking at in this one. And then we're going to look at emotional stress. How do you manage your stress? What about your emotional maturity? Forgiveness. How do you do forgiveness? And have you done forgiveness for people who hurt you? One of the things I found in ministry is that I had to grow a pretty thick skin, and I had to be pretty forgiving of people who said nasty things about me because I was not leading the church where they thought it should go. Kindness. What about those things? Emotional life. A social life. Boundaries. I'm actually going to look at those in the emotional part. But support systems. Who do you have to support you? Positive social media. How are things doing there? All kinds of studies have shown that social media can bring us down. People get depressed if they're on social media too much. Communication. Time together. With your spouse, with significant friends, with others in ministry, and asking for help. Now, those are going to be mixed in. I'm going to approach it as one section of social care for yourself, but also those other things like boundaries and asking for help in emotional growth in self-care. And then spiritual, time alone with Jesus. Meditation. Again, yoga is in there, not necessarily I'm a proponent of yoga per se, but that you're doing something that puts you into a meditative, relaxing kind of situation. Connection with nature. There's something healing about being in God's creation. And then journaling, I'll look at that a bit, as well as fasting, about prayer, creating a sacred space in your life. So these are the kind of things we're going to be looking for. Here's how they're put now. And today we're going to begin with physical health. This is a picture of a typical pastor's study. It looks a lot like mine did. I no longer have a study like that. I have one in my home, which has very few shelves on it, so there aren't so many books. But you'll notice that there are some prominent features in this study. There's the desk where supposedly the ministry leader is opening the Word, is opening materials, is studying things to be better prepared to do their ministry. And then there is a comfortable chair. For one of two reasons, I think. One is people who come to see the ministry leader, and they can sit in the comfortable chair while the ministry leader sits in the desk chair, and they can have a conversation with a small table between them, which will indicate a certain amount of barrier, and then also a welcomeness to speak across this barrier to each other. I found in my own study experience that the soft chair was something I often sat in order to read, in order to reflect. Now, the bottom line is this. When I look at my years and years and years of ministry, a lot of the time was spent sitting, just sitting. I would get up in the morning, I would sit, and I had my devotional time when I began to understand how important that was to my self-care. And then I would go to church, and I would sit in my office chair, and I would sit in the comfortable chair, And I'd go and sit down for lunch, often lunch in a restaurant with someone because there was somebody I wanted to talk to and be part of their life and or them be part of the ministry. And I'd go home and I would sit for dinner and then I'd sit reading or watching TV in the night. If you were like me, in other words, you're a normal person, you spend a lot of your time sitting, just sitting. And that can be bad for you. It does all sorts of things to you. Now, all kinds of studies have been done, again, about the benefits of even simple exercise. Simple exercise like walking. Walking creates, or even more physical exercise, creates a release of endorphins in your body, which are those things that help us feel better about ourselves. It helps the heart beat more effectively and more efficiently when you are regularly doing some kind of exercise. It can be walking, it can be running, it can be riding bike, it can be swimming, it can be, you name it. There are all sorts of options for our physical exercise. And not only that, you know, exercise is good for physical health, but also creativity. There was a Stanford study that found that people who exercise regularly, and again, they were looking at the low bar exercise of taking a walk every day. And they found that people who did that found an increase in their creativity. Now, if you're in ministry, one of the things you need desperately is creativity. And this is one way to get that. Now, here's a survey of pastors. How are pastors doing with this? 31% said in a survey that they do not exercise at all. Almost one-third do not exercise at all. 37% say 3 to 4 times per week, which is considered good. Especially the 4 to 5 times a week, excellent. 32% are kind of somewhere in between. They exercise, but it's rather haphazard. And so, if you're going to care for yourself, the point is, you're going to have to develop a way of physically engaging your body in exercise. I don't know what that means for you. You know, for me, I took up running, and then I love to play basketball. And so I got a group of guys together, and they ended up continuing every Saturday morning. We rented a gym, and we played every Saturday morning. And then I was in a community in California where a gym was open to us by a local Christian school, and 3 times a week I played basketball, and it was a ball. I mean, I loved it because I could feel the endorphins. I remember running down the court, dribbling the ball, and just feeling, yes, this feels so good. For you, it might be joining YMCA or joining some other club around that will allow you to swim or will allow you to exercise, will allow you to work out with weights. Maybe for you, it's getting something in your home. I now have a treadmill in my basement, and I have an exercise bike there so that I can bike for a while. In the summers, I do biking with my wife. It's got to be something that you do. And it's going to have to be something that you discipline yourself to do. Later on, we're going to talk in the next session about using your time wisely. And I just want to say that scheduling time in for exercise is vitally important. And maybe one of the boundaries that we talk about that you say, you know, these are things that nobody interrupts except for certain family crises because I need this. I need this. You do need it, whether you recognize it or not. So exercise is going to be vitally important to your self-care. Your diet is going to be vitally important to your self-care. Now, I put this person there who's scarfing down a couple of donuts because as a pastor, there's just a lot of stuff available to you to eat, right? Often in the office, if you go to a church office or a ministry office somewhere, there's going to be food to eat, and it's likely going to be pretty sugary. There'll be cookies, there'll be donuts, there'll be bars of various kinds, and you'll run into various situations when you're visiting somebody in their home and say, oh, let me give you a cookie and like a cup of coffee. There's lots of opportunity. And then there's this thing called comfort food. Comfort food, a desire for it happens when you've been under a particular kind of stress for a little bit, and then it just sounds so good. Now, I had to realize this is part of my psyche. I was coming home from a meeting just a couple of weeks ago, and it had been a little bit of a tense meeting because the church is at kind of a turning point. And it was a three-hour meeting. We started at 7. We finished a little after 10 p.m. And then I had to drive home about 35 miles. And on my way home, I'm thinking, wow, that was something. I'm reflecting on the meeting, trying to come down. And then I remembered, there's a McDonald's at the next exit and a chocolate shake. Oh, man, that's one of my weaknesses. A chocolate shake sounded so very good. And so I pulled off and I started going into the drive-thru. I said, you know what? Some fries would go good with that. And they said, well, so what are cheeseburgers? So here I am at 10:30 at night eating a cheeseburger, fries, and chocolate shake. Now, the thing about comfort food is this. The food that, you know, attracts us tends to be full of sugar, full of sodium, full of fat, and full of all kinds of things which aren't necessarily good for you. And so the person in ministry has to watch out. Now, in the United States, here are just some statistics. This is the United States. 73.6% of us in the United States are overweight from our ideal weight. 41.9% are obese. That's a large, large percentage. Now, I don't want to fat shame anyone here because, you know, many of us have to deal with genetics, and sometimes those genetics are very favorable. You know, I've got a friend who can eat anything at 70 years old and doesn't gain an ounce. That's not true for me. I don't know what your situation is, but I do know that there's a tendency in our society to eat more and exercise less. And the point I'm trying to make is this. You need to watch your diet. Now, again, you may need support for that. You know, when you go into Weight Watchers, you get support. That's an organization that helps people, supplies menus for them, and you may need to lose weight or just to maintain where you are. You need to watch your diet because it has an impact on who you are. It has an impact on your ability to handle the stresses of ministry. It has an impact on your longevity of life, as well as your health doing the life of ministry with all of its stresses. And so I want to encourage you, as part of your self-care, to look at your exercise practices and to look at your food choices, your diet. Now, you may need to covenant with somebody do this with it. Some people do it with their spouse. Some people do it with a significant other. Say, look, I need to be accountable in this area. And, you know, I'll share later about my accountability partner, but somebody with whom I recently shared a couple of months ago in our conversation, I shared, you know, I feel like I'm out of control with my eating. I go and snack a lot. For me, that's something. And snacks I have are usually sweet, and I'm going through the grocery store, and I'm buying these kind of crackers, and I'm buying these kind of candies, and et cetera. And hold me accountable for what I eat. I don't know what it's going to take for you, but I do know it's going to take something. So exercise and diet, vital part of self-care. So self-care involves physical health. It also involves emotional health. And I want to begin that today. What does that entail? First of all, it means when you need counsel, get it. All of us need a counselor, a good friend, somebody with whom we can be honest. When you need that, and you'll be able to know when you need it, if you'll admit it to yourself, you don't deny, you're not in self-denial about where you are with self-care. When you need counsel, get it. Now, one study by Lifeway Research tried to figure out why don't ministry leaders get the help they need, get a counselor. And here's the answers they gave. Number one, they're uncomfortable with the role reversal. They're accustomed to being the counselor, not the one being counseled. Now, that may be you. I know it was me. Two, they're supposed to be the experts. And what will people think if they know you're in counseling? That was a big one. In the church I served in California, we started a counseling center. And we found that people from the church didn't want to go there. In fact, they were going to a Presbyterian church near us, and going there rather than come to us, because if they walked into the church building and people knew they were there for counseling, what would they think? They're concerned about confidentiality. They're supposed to be the experts. Three, they're concerned about confidentiality. That's a very real concern. And so with whom you share is an important question. I remember when in that first church, when I finally realized I was depressed, I remember talking to the elder who was responsible for, you know, the meetings, the elder meetings, and he came and visited me, and I was sick in bed at the time. He stood in the doorway, I remember, and I had to admit, says, you know, I'm not doing well. Physically, I was getting colds. I was getting sick all the time because I hadn't physically taken care of myself. Emotionally, I was shot. I said, you know, I'm depressed. And he assured me, it was a good feeling, he assured me of their love in this church for me, and their willingness to work with me to get the help that was needed, and I felt good. A few days later, I was better, and I was out of bed, and I was doing ministry again, encountering people, and I encountered the guy that was going to sponsor a radio program that we were going to begin in the community with a local radio station, and he said, I hear you're depressed. I said, what? From whom did you hear it? Well, the one person I shared it with was the elder. So be very careful. This is why people don't do it, because they feel like they're going to be burned. But if you go to a professional, there's not that worry. Four, they distrust psychology, which if that's where you are, yeah, you're going to get over something else. Five, they over-spiritualize mental health. In other words, if you're depressed, you say, well, if I only get my act together spiritually, then I'll be okay. And that may not be true. There are physical things that happen with emotional health that need addressing. Sometimes there's things, I know in my own life, there were things from my family of origin that I had to come to grips with in order to better care for myself, and things that had made me into a driven person rather than a called person. They can't identify the right counselor. Nowadays, that's not truth. Yeah, you try one. If it doesn't feel like a good fit, you go to a next. Seven, they have limited accessibility to a trained listener. Now, I don't think that's true anymore. I mean, there are so many that are available online, and all you got to do is look them up, and you can create an online presence that you talk with them through a computer. For some people, that's more difficult than in person. For some people, it's easier because you feel a little bit of distance from it and you can be more honest. But people are available now. You just have to make the work of getting one. Eight, they have limited budgets. That could be true. Counseling is expensive. But if you look, if you're in ministry, there are options. In my community, there are two counseling centers. One is a county counseling center supported by the government. And it's difficult to get an appointment there, and it's a hard place to get in. The other one, it was begun by a group of Christian pastors and turned into a fully orbed counseling center. And one of the things they offer to ministry leaders is that you can go there and get counsel for free. Did you hear that? Free. Check around. You can put in your search engine in your computer, free counseling for pastors or free counseling for ministry leaders in my area. And you'll find it. Now, sometimes you'll find it outside your area, and then you can Zoom or you can FaceTime with a counselor. And I put number nine. That wasn't in the research. But for me, this was a big one. Pride. I remember when I was in that first church and I was in depression, I was in this anguish of spirit and soul. And there's one person I'd identified. And I thought, I want to talk to him. I think he'll understand. And I went to a meeting where I thought he was going to be, and he wasn't there. And I remember driving home afterwards and saying, you know, he wasn't there. What does that mean? And I prayed that he would be there. And then I realized I was hesitant to share even yet, even though I was hurting so badly inside emotionally. And I realized it was pride that I thought he might think less of me if I shared with him the challenges that I have. So, emotionally, you've got to get your act together. Now, one more subject I want to take up in this emotional side, and that is how setting healthy boundaries is an act of self-care. Let me run through this. This man, Henry Cloud, is a person who's helped me a great deal. His book is Boundaries. when to say yes, how to say no, to take control of your life. And the website is boundaries.me. You'll find there a lot of resources, and they're free. He does this out of concern for people like you who are involved in ministry. So he says boundaries is this. Imagine a property line. That's all a boundary is, a property line that just puts the limits on your property. Now, if you have a property, you answer these big questions. Who owns your property? You do. Who controls your property? Who can come on your property? Who stays off your property? You control it. Who's responsible for the upkeep and the care of your property? You are. And that all works really well until you have a neighbor. And that neighbor owns his property, controls his or her property, is responsible for his or her property. But the trouble comes when maybe that person who's next to you doesn't take care of their property. And maybe they try to bring their problems into your property. And I put that represented by four arrows there. In other words, within your property, you control your feelings, your attitudes, your behaviors, your choices. You have choices. And so when somebody else wants to break through your barriers, your property line, and make their problem, you have choices. You have choices. You can let someone in. You can create a doorway and you can let people in. You can let people into your life, into your presence, into your energy. And some of these people are going to be great folks. I can tell you that from experience. They're going to be fantastic people. And they'll fill you up and they'll make you feel good about life. But some will come and they'll find that they want to get into your property, and many people just let them. They have no boundaries. I was talking to an elder from a church that I'm a part of. My wife is still a member there, and I attend occasionally, but I'm not involved elsewhere. But she took on the role of elder, a shepherding elder, so her responsibility is caring for people in the church. And she was somebody who was just really well motivated. But there was one person in the church there that just drained her. This person was constantly coming. It was a, you know, they don't talk about the types of people you meet, but this is a very draining person, you know. I don't have enough money to get my groceries this week, so elder feels like she's responsible to get the money to help that person along. Now, I need this certain kind of Pepsi. Could you stop at the store and get it? Because very draining person, didn't have any, didn't have a car. You know, I need a ride here or there. And the elder constantly let that person's problems become her problems. And as a result, after a period of time, she was just drained. And thankfully got some training in counseling and training in boundaries and was able to begin to say no. Now, I entered ministry, as I said, with a desire to lay down my life for Jesus Christ. But what happened often is that I thought that my time, my energy belonged to everybody else. And my family began to suffer as a result. And I remember the day, from encouragement with my wife, some good counseling, when I finally said no to somebody. This person called me again. It was a very draining person, as far as, you know, always wanting something from me. And she said, "I need you to come over right now." Why do I need to come over? We were about to sit down to dinner, and that I defined as one of my boundaries when I was working through that. That dinner with my family, unless it's a main real crisis, was going to be sacrosanct. That's what we did together. That's a time we met. That's a time we reviewed our day. That's a time we prayed together. That's a time we talked together. And I was about to sit down again. "I need you to come right now," she said. Her son was there, and he was making some bad choices, and she wanted me to convince him not to make those bad choices. And I remember sitting on the phone and the freedom that came when I finally said, "Now tell me about this. How long has this been going on?" "Well, it's been going on for weeks." I said, "Is anything going to be different if I come now or if you come to my office during office hours tomorrow at 10 a.m? And finally, you know, begrudgingly, she admitted that was true, that nothing would change. And so we made the appointment and I sat down for dinner with my family. You have choices. Choices about whether you let somebody into your property, your life, or not. You have choices on how a person can come in. And I remember, boy, my boundaries were so shot back then. I remember a woman coming to the door crying, and I ended up taking her to the psych hospital when she had a husband. And realized, wait a minute, there's a boundary how I'm going to treat people and how they're going to treat me. Henry Cloud says this about how to say no. You've got to set priorities. The word priority means something comes before. It comes before. And there are things I say yes to. In the example I gave about my family dinner, I said yes to a family dinner, and that meant I could say no to other things. He says, let your priorities be the strategy that tells you when to say yes and when to say no. Say yes to people and activities that help you realize and fulfill your dreams, relationships, and pursuits that you have prioritized. Say no to the people and activities that push you further away. Now, some of this we're going to be talking about in the rest of this course, but you know, I had to realize that I had to quit counseling people. I realized I wasn't gifted for it, I wasn't trained for it, and so I put a boundary on that. I'd meet with couples once if they were having marriage difficulties and say, you know what, you don't really want me to counsel you. I'm not trained for this, but I know some people who are, because I'd done the research in the community. And I put a boundary around that. I don't do long-term counseling with people. And if they have financial issues, I convince the church to... All of this is part of taking care of yourself emotionally. We're going to talk more about this, so stay tuned for the next session of self-care.